Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So on page 4546, at the bottom, Bhaktisandarbha Anucheda 28. Bhaktisandarbha Anucheda 28 teaches from Bhagavatam 2.2.33 that direct devotional service to Sri Krishna is the most auspicious means of deliverance from material existence. There may be other paths of liberation, even those mentioned in passing within the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, but they are still conditional. In other words, dependent upon desha, kala, and patra. Pure devotional service is the independent and supreme process. See purport to 32nd verse. Unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service, nimisha, bhakti yoga is the phrase used in the original Sanskrit. Under the Supreme Lord, the seer of both the transcendental and material worlds, he should remember or meditate, nimisha, the phrase used in the original Sanskrit is smareta, which is, in the context of this verse, indicates jnana yoga, upon the universal form of the Lord at the end of his prescribed duties, nimisha. Kriya avasane is the original Sanskrit phrase that indicates karma yoga. This verse is spoken by Sukadev Goswami to illustrate the conditional nature of both karma and jnana bhakti yoga. Jnana and karma. Bhakti yoga arises naturally in the heart of the spiritually awakened soul. 1. In Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.15-32, Sri Sukadev presents these yogas as means by which a yogi may either quickly or gradually attain liberation. Nimisha. But as Srila Prabhupada makes clear in his purport to verse 31, short of reviving his transcendental relationship with the Lord as his eternal servitor, the yoga system is not free from weeds that choke the growth of the bhakti creeper in the heart. Even though yoga purifies one of sinful activities and promotes knowledge of the self as spirit instead of matter. Therefore, Sukadev Goswami urges Bhagavatam 18, Vaishnavanam amananti tat. The yogi should know that everything is connected to Krishna. With these words, the great sage advocates Mistra Bhakti, i.e., whatever one desires to obtain from his practice of karma, jnana, or mystic yoga, he should be careful to harmonize it with the goal of bhakti yoga, nimisha. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 18, quote, the devotee tries to engage everything in his service, does not create perplexities by falsely lording it over the creation of the Lord. Those who fail to do this despite great accomplishment in fruit of work, mental speculation, and mystic power are called duratmas. They wrongly conclude the pure spiritual form of the Lord to be material. In verse 33, Sukadev goes beyond Mr. Bhakti, declaring without any compromise. 2. For those who are wandering in the material universe, there is no more auspicious means of deliverance than what is aimed at the direct devotional service to the Lord. 3. Srila Sridhar Swami comments, in the material world there are many persons seeking the path of liberation by performing austerities, yoga, and other spiritual activities, but they are not the right path. That is confirmed in this verse by the word nahi, certainly not. Then devotional service, yato bhakti yoga, no, na, other, anya, path, is bhavet, that is auspicious, shivaha, that is to say happy and free from obstacles. The activities that please the Lord are described in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.6. The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity, is that by which men can attain loving devotional service to the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated, uninterrupted, to completely satisfy the self. So we see here a very nice overlap of these points, is that so many paths are there that are spiritual. Spiritual meaning that they're meant to bring realization of the soul, bring one to be freed from the material energy. But here in this last, the supreme occupation is that by which men can attain devotional service, loving devotional service. So in other words, they're only tools. So whatever the path is, as long as it gives you pure devotion to the Lord, that's what you want. Because the point is to develop devotion to the Lord, not to be spiritual. Does that make sense? Because here, we use the spiritual can mean means be used in many ways. Spiritual just basically means not material, out of the material world, situated within transcendence. But actual spiritual means that which is in connection with the Lord in devotional service. Right? So we make a distinction between transcendentalists who are only getting out of the material world and transcendentalists who are actually going into the spiritual world in loving devotion to the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? It's a natural way of... It's not contradicting, just like Prabhupada's pointing out that those who follow the Vedic culture actually do well. You know, they're actually superior. And in this list of showing people who have done great things, who are from India and who have followed the Vedic culture, he even mentions persons like Mahatma Gandhi and Vivekananda. Right? These are Indians that have done well. Right? Once you've proven, okay, that you follow the Vedic culture, now it's a problem, a part of following Vedic culture properly, according to Parampara. Now we see Mahatma Gandhi and, Vivekananda drop off. Then it's those who are properly sampradayically situated according to Guru Sadhu and Shastra. Then once that's been accepted, then he says, those who follow Shastra for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. Then he drops off the Shankarites. Right? And then leaves just the four sampradayas. Right? Then he recommends of the methods of worship of the Supreme Lord, then worship of Sri Krishna is the best. Right? And of that, according to Lord Chaitanya. So then you drop off the other sampradayas. Right? So it just keeps going like this. Does this make sense? So here, Jiva Goswami is very nicely pointing out how Sukadev Goswami is taking us up through being materially attached, not even necessarily aware that there is such a thing other than that, making us aware there is a spiritual path. Then that's good. But the spiritual path is impersonal because we just know it's spiritual, right? We mentioned there's two kinds of like definitions of spiritual. So then from that, then we see it's personal. Therefore, everything in this world is personal, so we bring it to the universal form. Then from that, we see that behind that, who is actually operating that, is a person. Then we come to Paramatma. So we've gone from Brahman to Paramatma. Then he says, then most important is worshipping Krishna. So you bring it to Bhagavan. Right? Now he's saying therefore, whatever the process, that which is mixed with karma or jnana or yoga, then the mix itself means here's where it will appear to be contradictory, because it's being said that whatever process is going to get you devotional service, that's fine, that's perfect. At the same time, there's only three processes you can use: karma yoga, jnana yoga, and dhyana yoga, right, for the conditioned state. And then they're saying, but these are not proper or not enough. This is not actual devotional service. Right? So there's a contradiction, seemingly. So what's being pointed out is, as long as it's seen as simply a tool to get you bhakti, it's fine. But if you actually think the karma, jnana, or dhyana is the actual spiritual goal, then you've missed the point. Does that make sense? So in other words, these processes are used, but you do not become attached to them, do not take them as important other than they give you devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? That's all. Yes, sir.
Yeah, this statement in the middle of item one, quoted from the Bhagavatam, Vaishnavam Amanti Tat.
Mm-hmm.
Yogi should know that everything is connected to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
With these words, the great sage advocates Mishra Bhakti. That is, whatever one desires to obtain from his practice of karma jnana or mystic yoga, he should carefully harmonize it with the goal of bhakti yoga. So this statement, as Maharaj has been explaining, you see, this is all in the context of yoga. So karma, jnana, and of course mystic yoga, and certainly bhakti yoga. We all have this conception, just from the word yoga, being, you know, above ordinary material activities, upwardly. I mean, Prabhupada talks about the yoga ladder, so it's one rung after the other, going up out of the material world. But Rupa Goswami has actually rendered the underlying message of all of what we've just read in a very down-to-earth way, in a very famous verse that anasakta shavishyam yataram upyanjita nirbandha krishna sambandhe yukta vairagya uchite. So you've all heard this term, yukta vairagya. A real renunciation means that whatever we're doing in life should be, yukta is just another word of the form yoga, but it's really meaning in connection with. You see, yoga has that connotation of a formal system of spiritual advancement defined in the Vedas. But yukta is more like the root word yuj, which just means connect. Like we have in English, it's often said that in English language we find a cognate, that's a linguistic term, a cognate of the word yoga in the word yoke. So yoke means just to yoke up some oxen to a plow. You know, that's not... I haven't read any yoga shastra where such a process is described, you know, included in some form of meditation. This is just farm work. And Rupa Goswami actually brings it down to a more, much more basic level. This anasaktasya vishayan, as Prabhupada explicitly points out in at least one purport, is actually referring to sex. So in the common conception of, I mean, what passes in people through people's mind, the idea when they hear the word yoga, I mean, it's like black and white. You know, yoga means some skinny renunciate, you know, sitting. We often hear of yogis sitting on boards of nails pounded through the bottom, or sometimes they sit on, you know, they can't get that together, they sit on a cactus. I've seen a photograph of that yogi laying down on a cactus and, you know, performing all kinds of bizarre austerities. The exact opposite of sex, which is, as Prabhupada says, the highest form of pleasure in the material world. So what Rupa Goswami is saying in this famous verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is that the process of pure bhakti, if we actually follow what is that, Dharma Virudha Bhuteshu Kamo Asmi from the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says sex for the production, you know, sex under religious regulatory principles for the production of God-conscious children is verily a manifestation of my very self in this world. That, of course, I mean, to be specific, means the male and female engaged in that relationship should be married, and their purpose for that contact should be following the principles which will bring into the world, instead of a Varnasankara, unwanted type of population, very much wanted, all good qualities, innate, at least innate, in the, shall we say, psychophysical, or whatever you want to call it, psychological, genealogical makeup, because the proper samskaras have been followed. So this is actually the greatest testimony to the power of devotional service. That when it says here, anything can be engaged in Krishna service by the yogi, it doesn't just mean in terms of the dictionary definition of yoga, you know, what is specifically karma yoga, jnana yoga. Say karma yoga according to Jaimi, or jnana yoga according to Patanjali, or whatever. Jnana yoga according to who's the famous incarnation of Lord? Dattatreya. Dattatreya is a great example of a very, very long time before Shankaracharya, teaching actually much better Mayavadi folks or Brahmavadi folks. Visha means sense gratification. So we will find in Srila Prabhupada's purports even. In Gita there's that famous purport that sense gratification and spiritual life do not go well together. But Rupa Goswami, you know, of course, elsewhere Prabhupada says other things, but generally that's the understanding. But here, in this very important verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami is saying that if it is pure devotional service, that means devotional service, pure devotional service begins on the level of nishkam karma yoga. You see, there is a mishra factor there, but when it's nishkam, then it's considered the beginning of purity. If it's sakam, then there's still our own desires, you know, interfering. Like I often say, the Hebrew root for the name Satan, shitin, means obstacle. It's a very important, at least it was a great lesson for me to understand this. Because that which is satanic is really nothing other than that which we create ourselves. You see, we put by our desires in front of ourselves obstacles. We want those obstacles to be there because of our attachments. We don't want to overcome it. And it's just like there's one often hears in religious classes taught in karmi schools about St. Augustine, who was one of the church fathers of the Catholic Church. And he was already a kind of quasi-Christian or something. He belonged not to the bona fide Catholic Church, but some offshoot church. And then he came in contact with the Catholic Church and these very strict and straightforward teachings at that time. Of course, nowadays, very much watered down. Practically not at all resembling the way they used to be then. So when he was confronted with that, St. Augustine, before he became a saint, and I say that word very advisedly, with quotation marks around it, but anyway, at least in the Christian church, he's accepted as a saint. He used to pray in his own, he wrote an autobiography, and he admitted himself that when he was confronted with the actual teachings, the actual principles of austerity that true Christian is supposed to follow according to the Roman Catholic doctrine. He used to pray to God, "Please, God, remove these obstacles from my path, but not right now." Because he was still so attached to them. So he wanted them. He was intelligent enough to know they have to go for my ultimate spiritual progress, but I'm just too busy enjoying them at the moment. And so God removed them, but give me a little more time so I can enjoy them. And actually, that's built into the Vedic path. We know Nivritti Marg and Pravritti Marg are there. And Prabhupada actually said Pravritti Marg in terms of it is applicable. It is actually applicable to Krishna consciousness. It is not just classical Vedic Varnashram Dharma. But Prabhupada said in Grihastha Ashram there is scope for Pravritti Marga, indulgence in sense gratification, simply for the sake of sense gratification. So we don't want to dwell on that subject, but it goes on. Everybody in ISKCON knows it goes on. And it's an obstacle. It's a satanic obstacle. But it's not thrown in our path by some little red devil with horns on his head and a pitchfork. We put it there because that's our prayer. Our prayer is very much like that of St. Augustine. See, yes, I know it's bad. I know it shouldn't be there. I do indeed, Lord, want it to be removed, but not right now, please. You see? So, that's the reason we have obstacles in our spiritual life, because we create them ourselves by our own impure desires. So pure devotional service begins with nishkam karma yoga. Nishkam means without desire. So you're in Grihastha Ashram. Srila Prabhupada himself used to even I don't like to use, perhaps the word chastise is a bit too strong, but you could say he used to lean on his Grihastha disciples who were childless. Why are there no children? Because it is part of the duty of the ashram. What's the point of getting married if there's no intention to have children? You see? What's the point? That would be, if you don't intend to have children, then, daddy should take vanaprast. Mommy should go work in the pujari department or something full time. They should separate. If their intention is not to have children, then what's the use? You see? So that was, we can see it in history. Srila Prabhupada's clear indication that if you're going to make this contract, this marriage contract, unless there's something biologically wrong, children should come, because that's part of the Dharma. And that's confirmed in Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He uses a term, I believe it's Jagat Vritti, if I'm not mistaken, something like that, which means that one of the pious activities is to increase the auspicious population of the world. Otherwise, why in Kali Yuga should the world fill up with demons? You know? Why should only the meat eaters, mleches, drunkards, fornicators, of all why should they be the only ones in peacing the population? Why not devotees? You see? Now, of course, Krishna says that this dharma guru bhuteshu kama asmi, this type of kam, he directly uses the word kam, which Prabhupada in 99 out of 100 cases translates as lust, as representing himself. Krishna saying, that is me. But we don't find anywhere in any scripture Krishna says, by this lust you will go back home, back to God. That is a stage. It's a stage along the path. That's why Prabhupada compares it, or directly says it is pravritti marga. It is something that is allowable at a certain stage, but eventually we must come to nivritti, giving it up. And then we can come to, you know, the higher realms of devotional service, because giving up entirely means then the question is, all right, so you don't have that lower taste anymore, where is your taste going to come from? So obviously hearing and chanting, more and more purified levels of devotional service. But pure devotional service actually does begin at, sometimes nishkam is translated as disinterested. There's actually no interest in sense gratification, because there is the awareness by Guru Shastra Sadhu that this activity is not, you know, it's going to give one a few moments of so-called bliss, and then many years of, you know, if it comes to fruition, many years of trouble. First of all, in the form of several years of sleepless nights, being woken in the middle of the night by shrieks and howls and squeals of cute little junior there, screaming his lungs out at some ungodly hour. And parents look at each other, your turn, no, it's your turn. And then even after that, you know, all the hassle. Anyone who's raised children knows all the different difficulties that come through the years until finally the child, Prabhupada said, age 16, the child should be able to take care of itself, and the child should be treated as a friend. Because by that age, a child should pretty much be able to move through the world on its own, at least if there's been proper Vedic education. So, it's important to know. It's not just classical yoga. It goes right down to the real nitty-gritty, the real root of our, you know, the reason we're here in the material world is attachment to sex life. This can be engaged in Krishna service, and devotional service is so powerful, it will overcome that hang-up, that obstacle we put in our path, if we follow these strictures that Krishna has put on it in terms of devotional service. Okay? End of sermon. Turn it over again to Maharaj. Really sounded like a sermon, right?
So you see, he's pointing out the difference between, means you have para, it means knowledge, para, apara, and avidya. Para meaning transcendental knowledge, apara meaning mundane knowledge that is connected to the transcendental knowledge, and then apara means that same knowledge that is, and avidya, which is actually the same knowledge that's apara. Does that make sense? In other words, you have transcendental knowledge, you have material knowledge. Then, and they are completely separate. If the material knowledge is connected to the spiritual knowledge, it's called aparavidya. Right? So all these systems of yoga, if they're not connected to Krishna, then they're useless. They're ignorance. Even though they're spiritual. And if they're connected to Krishna, then they're useful, because then they become tools in devotional service. But it still is devotional service that is the importance of the prominence. Like that. That would be, you know, that would kind of like, I mean, to me, would sum up a way of looking so that this contradiction makes sense, seeming contradiction. Another thing that came out, which is very interesting, is to note the difference. I think it was a very important point Maharaj made on the sakam and nishkam, is that karma, jnana, and yoga can be sakam or nishkam. So sakam means you're doing it for your own purpose, but as devotees, you connect it to the Lord. And nishkam means you're using it simply as tools to go back to Godhead. Right? It means you don't have anything you want to gain from it. You just want to use it to get out. Yes, sir.
I believe we've already read in previous chapter this appendix from Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami actually defines from that verse akama savakama vamokshakama, that the akama means for Krishna.
Uh-huh.
Means the devotee. It doesn't mean actually disinterested. It means
for Krishna.
He's actually doing it for Krishna. That's the only way you can actually achieve real akam or nishkam. Mm-hmm. Has to be for Krishna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does that make sense? It means if it's for Krishna, you're actually, it is nishkam. Because the jnanis, the yogis, and that actually they are sakam, and that they have their own purpose. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's using that principle of that you use the intelligence to make a distinction between two things. Then this is thrown. Then you take that thing that you didn't throw, then make distinction there and throw part of that. And then take that next thing, and so that's why sometimes there seems to be overlapping definitions. But it's not actually. It's always saying this one thing. What is done for Krishna, for his pleasure, you know, what is it? Perform your duty with knowledge, thinking of me, for me. Right? So, perform your duty, karma yoga, in knowledge, jnana yoga, thinking of me, jnana yoga, for me, bhakti yoga. And that's like, from what I've understood, is the main theme of the Bhagavad Gita. And just so many angles are showing technically what is karma, what is jnana, what is jhana, what is bhakti.
The whole thing taken together is actually called Buddhi Yoga.
Yes, and taken together is Buddhi Yoga.
Yeah. And just nice example, you may or may not have heard this before, but it's very, very illustrative, and it comes directly from Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj mentioned Vivekananda, so Vivekananda's guru still the widely notorious
Pujari.
We don't even like to say his name, because his name is very nice, but
him who we do not mention.
Shall we just say RK? Anyway, oh, right. We very often see his picture here in Bengal. RK. I'm not going to say the name in connection with this rascal.
Pujari Ji.
But his former name was Gadadhar Chatterjee.
Yeah.
So we can say Gadadhar Chatterjee. And then he became well known as an avatar by the name RK. Initials RK, and Prabhupada said he ruined all of Bengal. So his disciples used to advertise him as being so renounced that when people would come for darshan, they would want to offer some donation So he'd be, you know, often sitting in this type of, you know, yoga posture with the palms out like that. You see, maybe some mudra. But anyway, the palms like this. And so so some donor, you know, would-be donor would try to, you know, come and take darshan and then try to slip some bundle of rupee notes into the open palm. And then the disciples used to boast that our Guru Maharaj is so renounced that as soon as money approaches his hand by instinct moves away. You see? So the donor is trying, you know, trying to get the money in the hand is just... He's in samadhi, you know, but his hand is moving all over the place. And Prabhupada would say, where's my hand? If some donor extends money, my hand automatically will immediately grab it, spin it for Krishna, and then extend itself for more. So that is a definite difference between Vaishnava and other kinds of pseudo-renounced yogis. Vaishnava is very happy to receive donations for Krishna. Doesn't, as Prabhupada sometimes used to say very proudly of some of his disciples who were collecting for projects that were dear to Prabhupada's heart, that they do not spend a farthing on themselves. Everything they sent to this project, I would be very pleased by that. A vast collection, but everything engaged in Krishna's service. That is also nishkam. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada held that in much higher esteem than just karma yoga. He considered the essence of bhakti yoga. He used to compare it to the Ramayana, bringing Sita back to Ram. That's not karma yoga. That's a deep, deep, deep lila of bhakti yoga. Sita is who? Lakshmi. Lakshmi belongs to Narayan. Lakshmi has been, in this day and age, captured by Ravana in the form of so many so-called leaders, probably called the misleaders of the modern world. Of course, it's all Maya Lakshmi. Their expenditure of that Lakshmi is their golden road to the courtroom of Yamaraj, paved in gold. So it turns out to be Maya Lakshmi, actually, but anyway. The Vaishnava desires to see all this stop. No, we don't like to see Lakshmi misused. We don't like to see anybody go to hell for misusing Lakshmi. We don't like to see the dire result. Prabhupada said only 10% of the population are deliberate demons. The other 90% are innocent people, but of course their tendency is to follow the example of those who are leading. So if those who are leading are demons misusing Lakshmi, then they will follow and also go to hell. So the compassion of heart of the Vaishnava does not, you know, cannot stand to see this, and therefore wants to see everything in its proper order, which means centered around Krishna. Especially Lakshmi, which makes in this material world everything possible. And sermon?
Okay. Then continue the next point. What are the symptoms of pure devotional service? Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 204. Bhagavatam 2.2, 34. C, 32 and 33 purports. 36 purport through 37 purport. 14. Where should one search for the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.36 says, Sarvatra. One should search for him everywhere in all time and place. Everywhere. Space. Everywhere means in all scriptures, performers of activities, places, senses, things, activities, duties, and results. In other words, in everything. Right? It's not just only in what is obvious or what we, you know, would call our sadhana. You know, but in everything that we do, everything should be connected to the Lord. Mm. Like that.
Yeah, not just doctrinally.
Yeah. Yeah, practically. Practically. It's just whatever, in other words, whatever is your interest, then that thing, because here it is, scriptures mentions that, performers of activities, but so many activities are there, places, wherever you are, senses, whatever they're doing, you have 10 of them, things means everything that you own and interact with, activities, whatever you actually do, duties, what is actually done, because it's what you're supposed to do, and that is what gives a result, and that's also given. Does that make sense? So there's nothing left out. So here when Krishna says everywhere, he literally means that.
Yeah, like in the early days, even in 1972, when Prabhupada first visited Moscow, there's a famous story how there was only one container in which it was very hard to find. After a long search, they managed to get some dal and some rice, and the only container it was possible to cook it in was Prabhupada's stool lota, I believe. And so they used that, because there was nothing else. So, but it was for Krishna, you see. So this principle actually, that's why I said not doctrinally. You see, it's not restricted. Because ultimately everything is pervaded by Krishna. And Krishna knows the heart of his pure devotee. Krishna knows the intentions. So Prabhupada's intention was certainly not to offend Krishna by cooking something in a, you know, dirty pot. But it was out of necessity of serving Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So unquestionably that was pure devotional service. Mm. The principle. Mm.
Yes, the Yudhishthira makes the point is that in emergency situation, that which would generally be classified as the proper religious duty may actually be actually sinful, maybe impious, because if you perform that activity and therefore then the result is not proper, because the result's for Krishna, then how one can call that pious? The rule is there for when things are normal. When things aren't normal, then there's rules that replace it. Right? So then, if one sticks, like what I was just saying, dogmatically to the standard rules that are meant for standard situations, when things aren't standard, then at that time, then it becomes improper. Otherwise here, the devotees don't eat or stuff like that, you know?
Prabhupada once said even the Saptarishis, the seven sages, under very dire circumstances when there was some worldwide famine, they ate a dog.
Yeah. Yeah, a hunch of a dog. That's mentioned. Or that one where someone said, you go preach in this place. So the only thing they have there to eat is meat, and the only thing to drink is vodka. You know, there isn't anything else. They're just, they don't, it doesn't make it. And so, how can I go there? And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur looked at the disciple and said, yes, 10,000 lifetimes ago, I also used to think like that. Doesn't mean that it's fine to break that. It means that you're willing to serve Krishna under any circumstance to please Krishna, not yourself. Like that. That the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be sought in all scriptures is described in Skanda Purana, in a conversation with Brahma and Narad in these words. 15. In the material world, which is full of darkness and dangers, combined with birth and death, and full of different anxieties, the only way to get out of the great entanglement is to accept loving transcendental devotional service to Lord Vasudeva. This is accepted by all classes of philosophers. Okay. Okay, so they're pointing out that this is meaning that you turn to the scriptures, because they clear darkness, they remove the dangers, they free one from birth and death, they free one from anxiety, and they free one from the material entanglement. So the scriptures are therefore showing that it's transcendental loving devotional service. So that will do everything else. So the scriptures are meaning this. 16. Anvaya, performance of prescribed duties in relation to the Vedic scriptures is described in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.34. The great personality Brahma, with great attention and concentration of mind, studied the Vedas three times. And after scrutinizingly examining them, he ascertained that attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the highest perfection of religion. So this is the meaning of prescribed duties. It's whatever you do, it's connected to Krishna. Right? Like that. 17. This is also explained in the following verse in both Skanda and Padma Puranas. By scrutinizing and reviewing all the revealed scriptures and judging them again and again, it is now concluded that Narayana is the supreme absolute truth, and thus he alone should be worshipped. Nimisha. We see from the above that one basic symptom of pure devotional service is that only a pure devotional service is that its only object is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The second basic symptom is that one who has developed rati, spontaneous loving attraction for Krishna, finds him everywhere, for in truth he is all-pervading. Another basic symptom of pure devotional service is that since he is the only object, Krishna alone is worshipped by the pure devotees. Interesting to note, I mean, this brings out a very nice point here, taking this second symptom, is that here is another question came up the other day about this element of the universal form. So we see here the aspect that those who have spontaneous loving attraction find him everywhere. Just like, let's say, you go to somebody's house, you don't necessarily have particular affection for somebody. You know them, but you don't. So let's say you see the picture on the table. You know, the child is there. Oh, your son. So you'll see there. But you could walk around the rest of the house, you will not see the kid. Right? But the mother who has great attachment to the child, then a piece of clothing, or, you know, that handprint on the wall, or, you know, they did something funny in this place, or, you know, so everything in the house can remind them of the child. Everything. It can be paraphernalia of the child, it can be activities that they perform in a particular place or a particular time. You know, the sun comes up and then they remember some activity that happened at that time with a child, or the phone rings and they're wondering if they're calling, or does that make sense? So everything that's here in the world then can remind a devotee of Krishna. So that's another aspect. That's how it will turn from simply energies to actually the person themselves. So that's what Sukadeva is pointing out, is that it shouldn't be left to just energies, because then that means there's attachment to jnana. But it should actually progress to the person themselves, so that everything reminds you of Krishna. Yeah. Yeah. 18. That the word anvaya also means avoidance of forbidden activities as well as performance of prescribed duties is made clear in the Garuda Purana in these words. Quote, even though one may have gone to the other side of all the Vedas, and even though one is well versed in all the revealed scriptures, if one is not a devotee of the Supreme Lord, he must be considered the lowest of mankind.
That's interesting. That means that what that means is that forbidden activities means those activities
that are not connected to Krishna.
So one may be, you know, Tri Vedi, Chatur Vedi, Brahmana, knowing all the rituals and everything, and all of that even shastrically speaking, is considered to be good.
Pious.
But if it's not, if he's not doing those activities, just as we see in the Krishna book, the story of the Brahmanas performing that sacrifice, and you know, when they are, when Brahmanas do such sacrifices, they're chanting Purusha Shukta, they're chanting to the Purusha, and so the Purusha, in form of Krishna and Balaram, sent their cowherd friends just at the right moment, just when those offerings are to be made to the Purusha, to beg. These Purushas that you're chanting to happen to be right out there in the woods, and they'd like their offerings, please. And the Brahmanas just ignored them because it wasn't according to their, you know, ritualistic little square box vision that they had. And so that, certainly we see the lesson of that, is it was a forbidden, or shall we say, in terms of Krishna book, that story, a form of neglect that bore them no fruit whatsoever. Whereas when their wives heard the Krishna book, they actually broke their Sri Dharma completely. They were married to these Brahmanas who were engaged in their so-called bona fide Dharma, and they just got all excited and ran away from home. See, women are not supposed to do that. Just ran out into the woods like mad women, and after cooking up a big feast and offered it to Krishna, and then they were begging Krishna, please take us. We can't go back. We've broken, you know, every rule in the book for you. And he said, don't worry. Because Krishna knew that by their association with him, that brief association that they would have, that when they returned, and this is exactly how it's described, they would be so effulgent, so purified in transcendental bliss that, you know, their husbands all covered with the smoke, you know, soot from the sacrifice and grumbling, and, you know, why isn't this working right? And as soon as they'd see their wives, they'd just, you know, drop the shruk and the shravan. You know, what are we doing this for? You know, look at our wives. They didn't go to Gurukul, they didn't learn how to do sacrifices, they didn't learn any of the vows, we know, they didn't learn all the Vedas, but look at them. They're in, you know, Param Brahman enlightenment, and we're just struggling to keep our sacrificial fire going. And Prabhupada has them saying, to hell with all this! They're so frustrated. So even though everything they're doing, they were doing from, you know, scriptural, literal scriptural point of view, was bona fide, because it wasn't for Krishna, because they, it's explained, out of fear of King Kamsa, actually. Because they knew his spies were everywhere. So they were scared, but being scared, what is that? You see? This is, Prabhupada says, the primary symptom of animal life. It means certainly not real brahminical consciousness, which means to know that I'm not the body. So they had to actually, if they were really were on the brahminical platform, they had no reason to be afraid anyway. If they weren't, they're absorbed in fruitive activities, and yet their wives just surrendered to Krishna on the spot and were blessed by all transcendental riches, direct association. And it's also stated that Krishna sent them back, this little esoteric point, because you'll find this interesting. Krishna sent them back because he considered, you're just, everything's there. You could stay, be in the forest like the gopis, except for one thing, because they brought up a religious principle that, you know, we have surrendered to you, so therefore you must accept us. They quoted Shastra to Krishna. And Krishna took that as meaning, huh, there's still that slight touch of you. You're so nice in so many ways. Krishna, you know, Krishna was so kind to them, but Krishna thought, there's a slight touch. You're still thinking you're Brahmanis. You're still thinking you can preach to me. So, go back home, face the music. Of course, they didn't have to face any. The only music they had to face was just separation from Krishna, you see. And that would burn out of their hearts any lingering abhiman, you see, identification of being Brahmani, you see, upper class. And then they would be qualified to actually be gopis. That's why Krishna sent them back. But certainly they were, you know, that's a detail. Compared to their husbands, they were light years ahead in spiritual advancement, simply because they had this, what Brahma is talking about, this rati, spontaneous attraction.
So there's just sum that up in the 11th canto. There's a verse that defines piety as that which is connected to Krishna, and impiety what is not connected to Krishna. So that means even material piety, if it's not connected to Krishna, is actually impiety. You know, Prabhupada gives the example of being bound by a iron chain, silver chain, or gold chain, but you're still bound. So that you're doing something, you're a nice guy, that's okay. But if it's not connected to Krishna, it's actually impious. Because actual piety is what's connected to Krishna. Right? The other form is simply so that the non-devotees at least act in a way that is culturally compatible with those who do everything for Krishna. So you have at least a common thing. They won't harass the devotees that, oh, you are weird, you know, oh, you're vegetarian, or, you know, you wear your mother's bed sheets, or you wear mud on your forehead. No, because they do it also. And to them it's considered progressive, it's pious, it's uplifting. So the devotees are doing it, they'll see them, oh, they're very nice, they're pious, they're good like this. So they'll be favorable towards the devotees, so they get a jnata sukriti. Right? Plus, because it's there, then the materialists will make sure that dhotis are made and saris are made and vegetables are grown and everything. And so then the devotees can have a proper life. But that's where it ends. But otherwise, it's not really pious because it's not connected to Krishna. Because what's pious means connected to Krishna. It's that simple. So it's very, very important. What Maharaj opened with was the Yukta Vairagya is connected means it's connected to Krishna. Not that you're using it. It has to be connected to Krishna. Just that you're using it's not enough. It has to actually be connected. Then it becomes actual. Like that. Okay, so then we'll end here. We'll continue tomorrow.
Thank you all for attending. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place.
Same station.
Same station, same wavelength. Okay. Same Srimad Bhagavatam.
Jai Ho.
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Jai.